Welcome to today's deep dive. So, you want to really understand the Babb v. Rand case, and we've got quite the legal battle to untangle today. It all revolves around, well, a will, a vacation property up in Maine, and some very specific wording that caused, well, a lot of debate.
Yeah, you could say it's a bit of a legal thriller, but, you know, Babb v. Rand is more than just juicy legal gossip. I mean, this case has some big implications, especially for lawyers and, of course, law students like yourself. Why? Because, well, it deals with those always tricky issues of wills and estate planning.
Okay, so let's set the scene here. We've got Alma Rand. She's leaving a vacation property to her stepson, John. Sounds straightforward enough, right? But there's a catch. She adds a specific requirement. The other heirs. They can't be denied access to the property during their lifetimes.
Right. She leaves it to him in fee simple. Sounds simple, but then adds this proviso about access for the other heirs. And let me tell you, that little word proviso, it really sets off a chain reaction that goes all the way to the Maine Supreme Judicial Court. You see, the lower courts, they actually sided with John, saying the proviso was void and he just got the property outright. But the Maine Supreme Judicial Court, well, they had different ideas.
They basically swooped in and said, hold on a second. They ruled it wasn't a fee simple absolute, but a fee simple subject to a condition subsequent. Now, I know those terms sound like they belong in a law textbook, but bear with me. They're really important for understanding this whole case.
Absolutely. To really understand what the court decided and, you know, what it all means for property ownership, we have to kind of break down these different types of estates. So let's start with the basics. Fee simple absolute. Basically, it's the most complete ownership you can have. You can use the property, sell it, even destroy it. You have total control.
So fee simple absolute, that's like the gold standard of owning something. But then we have fee simple determinable, which sounds a lot more, well, complicated.
Yeah, it's a bit more nuanced. With fee simple determinable, ownership comes with, you know, a condition. If that condition is violated, proof, the ownership goes right back to the original owner or their heirs. It's like ownership with an expiration date. You mess up, you lose it.
Okay, so there's a chance you could lose the property if you don't follow the rules. But how's that different from this fee simple subject to a condition subsequent, which is, you know, what the court decided on in Babb v. Rand?
Now that's the real question here. See, with fee simple subject to a condition subsequent, if you violate the condition, you don't automatically lose the property. Instead, the original owner or, you know, their heirs, they have the right to take it back. But there's a catch. They actually have to take legal action to get it. So it's more like a safety net for the original owner or their heirs, you know.
So in this case, the Maine Supreme Judicial Court was saying, okay, John, you own the property, but you can't just deny access to the other heirs, like it says in Alma's will. And if you try to block them, they can take you to court to enforce their rights.
Exactly. They weren't just looking at fee simple in a vacuum. Yeah. They wanted to make sure they were respecting what Alma wanted, her intent, and this type of state. Well, they felt it was the best way to do that.
It's like they were saying, let's look beyond the legal jargon here and really try to figure out what Alma wanted to do with her property.
Mm-hmm.
And this brings us to a really important point, which is the court's reasoning. What were the key factors that led them to this decision?
Well, when you really break down their decision, one big factor was this commitment to honoring what Alma wanted, even if, you know, the legal language she used wasn't perfect. They really scrutinized that proviso, especially how it fit with the whole fee simple thing.
So they weren't just laser focused on like isolated words or phrases, right? They were trying to grasp the overall spirit of the will, looking for the story behind the legal document.
You got it. The Maine Supreme Judicial Court, they recognize that legal documents, especially wills, they're about people's lives. Alma, she wanted to provide for both her stepson and those other heirs.
It sounds like they were playing detective almost as much as they were judges. Like they were piecing together Alma's wishes from these clues she left in her will.
That's a fantastic way to put it. The court, they saw that proviso not as this roadblock to John's ownership, but as like this key part of defining what his ownership actually meant. They were trying to reconcile those seemingly competing desires in the will.
So they weren't just blindly applying the rules. They were trying to figure out what was truly just and fair.
Absolutely. And their decision. It's had a big impact on how courts handle similar cases. Babb v. Rand, it set a precedent for dealing with wills that have provisions that seem to contradict each other. The big lesson. The author's intent. That's what matters most.
This case really drives home the point that a will isn't just some static document, right? It's an expression of someone's wishes for their legacy.
Exactly. And the courts, they have to be very careful about how they interpret those wishes and make sure they are upheld, even when the legal language gets tricky.
This is all really fascinating, and I'm really interested to dig into some of the more practical implications of this case. I'm sure our listeners are curious how Bab V. Rand affects, legal professionals and anyone dealing with estate planning.
There's definitely a lot to unpack there, and it's, really important for understanding how to prevent these kinds of legal battles from happening in the first place. For legal professionals, people like yourself, Bab V. Rand, it's a bit of a cautionary tale. It really highlights how important it is to be super clear, like crystal clear, in how we use language, especially when we're drafting wills.
I see what you mean. It's like the court is giving us this like master class in how to avoid all that ambiguity, so we don't have these conflicts down the line. So for lawyers who are, actually drafting wills, what are some of the big takeaways based on Bab V. Rand?
Well, one of the big ones is, you really have to understand the different types of estates we talked about earlier. It's about using the right tool for the job, you know what I mean? Like, if you're dealing with conditions or restrictions on property ownership, well, mixing up those fee simple terms, absolute, determinable, subject to a condition subsequent, it can lead to some serious problems.
I was like using the wrong wrench, right? It
Right.
might look like it fits, but you're just going to end up stripping the bolt or something. So how can lawyers make sure they're choosing the right legal wrench, so to speak, when they're writing a will?
Specificity, that's key. Bab V. Rand, it shows us that even simple phrases like in fee simple, they can turn into huge battles if they're not, carefully qualified or put into the proper context. We as lawyers, we have to be incredibly precise with the language we use to make it very clear what type of estate we're creating and, any conditions that go with it.
So it's more than just knowing the legal terms. It's about using them the right way to actually accomplish what the client wants and avoid any loopholes or misinterpretations.
Right, exactly. And that really ties into another key point, communicating effectively with the client. We have to be able to explain these complex legal concepts, but in a way that our clients actually understand. It's not about throwing legal jargon at them, it's about empowering them to make informed decisions about their, legacy.
It sounds like finding that sweet spot between legal precision and clear communication. That's a real art form, especially in estate planning.
Oh, it definitely is. And Bab V. Rand, it really shows how crucial that balance is. So let's dig a bit deeper into some of the practical drafting techniques that can help lawyers avoid this kind of ambiguity that caused all these problems in the first place. What are some tangible tips for actually writing those conditions clearly so they hold up in court?
Yeah, that's what I'm curious about. How can we avoid these proviso problems in the future?
One of the most effective strategies is, well, be super explicit when you're writing the condition. So instead of using, vague terms, use really specific phrases that clearly define exactly what the condition is and what happens if it's broken. Like instead of saying, he shall never deny access, you could say something like, on the condition that he shall provide reasonable access. That makes it clear what the condition is and leaves no room for ambiguity.
Right, it's like giving a clear set of instructions. You don't want anyone getting lost along the way. So, are there any other techniques that can make those conditions crystal clear?
Definitely. Another good tip is to like separate the condition from the actual grant of ownership. So instead of squeezing them both into the same sentence, create like distinct clauses for each. That way it's easier to read and less likely to be misinterpreted.
It's like breaking down a complicated math problem, right? Make
Yeah.
it step by step so it's easier to follow.
Exactly. Being organized and structured is so important when you're drafting legal documents. A well-structured will, with clear headings and separate clauses for all the key elements, it's just easier to understand.
So it's not just about picking the right words, it's about putting them in the right order. There's a lot more to will drafting than you might think.
Absolutely. Bab V. Rand, it shows us that even what might seem like small mistakes in the drafting process can have big consequences down the line. We're not just playing around with words, we're talking about people's lives and their assets. It's serious stuff.
You're right, it's a huge responsibility. So, moving on a bit, let's think about what this case means for courts when they're interpreting wills, especially those with provisions that seem to, clash with each other.
That's where Bab V. Rand really emphasizes the role of the court. It reinforces this principle that's been around for a long time, the importance of the testator's intent.
So when a court is looking at confusing or contradictory language in a will, their main goal is to figure out what the person writing the will actually wanted.
Precisely. And to do that, they have to look beyond just the words themselves. They have to consider the context, you know, the circumstances, and anything else that might help them understand what the person truly wanted. It's a bit like being a detective, trying to decipher the author's meaning.
So it's not just about mechanically applying the law, it's about grasping that human element behind the legal document.
Exactly. And Bab B. Rand is such a good example of that. The court really dug into Alma's will, you know, they looked at the family dynamics, and ultimately they came up with a solution that really reflected what they believed she truly wanted. It reminds us that justice, especially in these kinds of cases, it often involves going beyond just the black and white of the legal text and really searching for the nuances of what the person intended.
It sounds like the court was walking this tightrope, trying to balance the requirements of the law with respecting the spirit of Alma's will. That must be a tough job.
It definitely is. Bab v. Rand shows how important the role of the court is in making sure those wishes are respected, even when the legal language is unclear or there are drafting mistakes that make things more complicated.
Okay, so let's bring this back to the people involved in the case. What actually happened to Muriel Bab and Redford Rand II? How did the court's decision affect their rights to the property?
Well, because of the Maine Supreme Judicial Court's decision, Muriel Bab, she inherited from John Rand, so she became the legal owner. But there was a catch. She couldn't just block the other heirs from accessing the property. Redford Rand II, along with the others, they still had the right to use and enjoy that vacation home during their lifetimes.
It's like she inherited this house, but there's this built-in group of people who can just come and go as they please. Not exactly what you picture when you think of owning a vacation property.
That's a perfect way to put it. It really shows how complicated things can get when you're dealing with these conditions subsequent. Bab might have been the owner on paper, but she couldn't just treat it like her own private retreat. She had to consider the other heirs and their rights.
And for Redford Rand II, this must have felt like a big win. He and the other heirs, they kept that connection to the family vacation home. Mm-hmm. They could still make memories there.
Absolutely. The court's decision, it reflects an understanding of the bigger picture. They realized that Alma didn't want to completely shut out her other children and stepchildren. She wanted to provide for them while still leaving a big chunk to John.
It's a good reminder that wills often involve trying to balance the needs and desires of, you know, multiple people.
Mm.
And the courts, when they're trying to understand those wills, they need to come up with solutions that make sense for everyone involved while still respecting the person who wrote the will.
That's exactly right. And Bab v. Rand is a perfect illustration of how courts can find that balance, even when they're dealing with parts of a will that seem to contradict each other and, you know, complex legal doctrines.
So stepping back for a moment, what are some of the bigger lessons we can learn from this case? Things that could help us avoid these types of disputes in the future, both for, you know, lawyers and for anyone thinking about estate planning.
One of the biggest takeaways, and I can't say this enough, is how important it is to be crystal clear when you're drafting legal documents, especially things like wills and estate plans. Using vague language or phrases that are open to different interpretations, well, that creates loopholes and can lead to unintended consequences, which often result in, you know, expensive legal battles. And in the worst cases, it undermines the very wishes the person writing the will was trying to express.
It's like building a house on a shaky foundation, right? If the language isn't solid, the whole thing could fall apart. So what are some specific steps that lawyers can take to make sure they don't run into the same kind of ambiguity that we saw in Bab v. Rand?
Like we discussed earlier, using super explicit language when you're stating conditions or restrictions, that's huge. Don't use general terms. Use specific phrases that make it absolutely clear what the condition is and what the consequences are if it's not met. And don't forget to keep the conditions separate from the part where you're actually granting ownership. That makes the will easier to understand and less prone to misinterpretation.
It's like creating this roadmap for, you know, how those assets should be distributed and how the person's legacy should be carried out. Every detail matters.
Precisely. Bab v. Rand is a stark reminder that even small errors, even what might seem like minor things in the drafting stage, can have major, long-lasting impacts. We have a real responsibility to be careful and meticulous when we're drafting these documents.
It makes you really think about the weight of the words we choose, right?
For sure. Okay, so let's dive into something that often causes confusion in these kinds of cases. The difference between a fee simple determinable and a fee simple subject to a condition subsequent. They sound really similar, but from a legal perspective, they're quite different.
Yeah, it's an important distinction,
yeah.
Especially when you're dealing with conditions on property ownership.
You got it. So with a fee simple determinable, If a specific condition isn't met, the ownership automatically goes back to the original owner or, you know, their heirs. It's like there's this built-in expiration date for ownership. If something happens that triggers that condition, boom, ownership changes hands immediately. No legal action needed.
So it's automatic. Seems pretty straightforward.
It is, in theory. But with a fee simple subject to a condition subsequent, it doesn't work like that. The original owner or their heirs, they have the right to take the property back if the condition is broken, but they have to actually do something to make that happen, usually by, you know, going to court.
So it's not automatic. It's like a right that you have to enforce.
Exactly. It requires someone to take action. And in Babb v. Rand, the court decided that what Alma Rand created in her will was a fee simple subject to a condition subsequent, not a fee simple determinable. They understood that she wanted to give John ownership, but with the condition that the other heirs could still access and use the property. And if he didn't follow that condition, well, the heirs could take legal action to protect their rights.
Got it. So the main difference is whether the change in ownership happens automatically or if someone has to go to court to make it happen.
Exactly. And that difference is really important because it affects what legal options everyone has. Babb v. Rand really underscores why being precise, both when you're drafting and when you're interpreting these types of estates, is absolutely crucial.
It's a great reminder that every word matters and that even small changes in the wording can have a huge impact on how a case unfolds. Okay, before we wrap up this part of our deep dive, I want to touch on another key element of Babb v. Rand. How long this condition on John's ownership actually lasts? Does it end when he dies? Or does it keep affecting anyone who owns the property after him?
That's a great question, and it brings up another important point from the case. The court made it clear that this condition, this right of the other heirs to access the property, it wasn't tied to John's life. It would last for the entire lifetime of each heir named in Alma's will.
So even if John had sold the property, whoever bought it would still have to deal with that condition. It sounds like it's permanently attached to the property.
That's right. This condition, it runs with the land no matter who owns it. That's why it's so important to do your research and due diligence when you're buying or selling property. You have to know what you're getting into.
It's like this hidden clause that could have big implications down the line, right?
Exactly. Babb v. Rand, it's a cautionary tale for both buyers and sellers. It reminds us that we need to understand the full history of a property, not just the current situation.
It shows how events from the past can still affect us today, especially when it comes to property.
And it emphasizes the lasting power of a well-written will. Alma's wishes, even though she expressed them decades ago, they're still shaping what happens to her property. It shows how important it is to get good legal advice and make sure our wishes are reflected accurately in our estate plans.
Absolutely. Well, I'm really interested to hear your final thoughts on all of this. Let's move on to the last part of our deep dive into Babb v. Rand. This whole deep dive has really highlighted, you know, how a will, it's not just a legal document, right? Mm-hmm. It's a story. It's someone's legacy, like a final message from, well, from someone who's gone.
You know, you're absolutely right. And as legal professionals, we have to remember that responsibility. Babb v. Rand, it really shows how important it is to have a well-crafted will, but also how things can go wrong if those intentions aren't clear, you know?
And it shows the important role the courts play in sorting through those gray areas. They're trying to find solutions that are fair and just, but that also honor both the spirit of the law and what the person wanted.
Yeah. Babb v. Rand reminds us that the law, it's not just rules and procedures. It's a way to resolve disputes, you know, to protect rights and to try to make sure things are fair. And in cases about estates and property, well, that framework is super important.
Before we wrap up this whole exploration, I want to kind of throw out a thought experiment for our listeners. Imagine you're Alma Rand back in 1932, you know, writing her will. Knowing everything we know now about the legal battles that happened afterward, what advice would you give her to avoid all that ambiguity that led to this, well, decades-long dispute?
That's a really interesting question. It makes you think about the lessons from Babb v. Rand, right? If I could go back and talk to Alma, I'd tell her, look, you have to be absolutely crystal clear about what you want. I'd encourage her to use precise legal terms, define those conditions really carefully, you know, no wiggle room, maybe even get advice from a few different legal experts to make sure that will is bulletproof.
So, like, assemble the ultimate legal team to help her draft a will that's not just, you know, legally sound, but that really captures everything she wants.
Exactly. And I'd remind her, It's not just about dividing up your things. It's about doing it in a way that, you know, hopefully prevents conflict and keeps the family, well, keeps the family together.
It's about leaving behind a legacy of, well, of love, not a legacy of lawsuits.
Couldn't have said it better myself. And that's something we should all think about, not just with wills and legal stuff, but in our everyday relationships too, right?
This deep dive into Bab v. Rand has been quite a journey. We've explored, well, all those twists and turns of how the law is interpreted, the complexities of estates, and, you know, how much power a well-written will really has. We've seen how important it is to be clear and precise, and also how vital it is to understand those human stories behind these legal documents.
Yeah, we've definitely learned from those past mistakes, gained some insights into how property ownership works, and seen how the law can be used to achieve, you know, both justice and fairness.
Well, we hope you've enjoyed this exploration of Bab v. Rand. It's a case that still has a lot to teach us, whether you're a lawyer, an estate planner, or just someone who's interested in how the law works.
So remember, knowledge is power, especially when it comes to legal matters. Keep learning, keep exploring, and always be on the lookout for those aha moments that, you know, help you understand how to achieve justice.
And as always, thank you for joining us on The Deep Dive. Until next time, happy lawyering.